The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the Social Studio.
This is the weekly podcast from Radio Today. Trevor is still not very well, so I'm Stuart Clarkson here for this week. And you join us out in the summer sunshine by the side of a busy road in a pub beer garden. And I'm with John Evington, who's a partner at The Radio People. Of course, well known in the industry for being at Signal Radio for many years, Piccadilly before that, and a group programmer with UTV, more recently at stations on the South Coast, and working with Steve Penk at The Rev. John, hello.
You know more about me than I know about myself. And it's, well, it's a grand old life, isn't it, sitting in the Skipton sunshine?
It is. And the reason we wanted to talk to you this week on the Radio Today programme is you did a blog post a couple of weeks ago suggesting there's somewhat of a radio renaissance going on. Tell us, you know, from your 30-odd years in radio, why you think now particularly the tide's turning a bit.
Well, I was turning into a bit of a cynical old devil, to be honest, but in recent times there seems to be a lot more positivity around. And, yeah, what kind of prompted the blog was a promotion we've worked on at The Radio People across community radio. I think I'm right in saying it was the first promotion across a group of community radio stations up and down the country. We were just really impressed, by and large, with the professionalism that the promotion was met with by those stations. And it got me thinking about where radio is now. And obviously, spectrum's been an issue. That's a job for Ofcom to manage. But with Digital 2 being advertised, the advent of DAB Plus, hopefully, before too long. There will be room for a lot more radio stations, both obviously on digital and on FM. In fact, the analogy I use is, and this is going to show my age, like the beer industry back in the 1970s. Traditional brewing methods have been in place since the dawn of time. The industry was a bit tired and a bit in need of reinvigoration. And new processes came along which resulted in keg beers. Do you remember Watley's Red Barrel? Are you too young for that? Whitbread Trophy?
No? Yeah, no. It's out of my time.
Tasted horrible. But for the brewing industry, it improved efficiency and it helped the bottom line. It did. It did the job. It reinvigorated the industry. And here we are, 35, 40 years on. Where are we now? Well, we've come through all that. Watley's Red Barrel, Whitbread Trophy Bitter, the pint that thinks it's a quart. Long consigned to history, but we have some very strong drink brands. You walk into a pub, there's the Boddingtons, the Speckled Hens, the Green Kings. But alongside those, we've seen the advent of microbreweries, and for me, that's community radio. You know, they are quality products produced by good local businesses, and I see that as being the direction community radio needs to move into, to raise their game and fill that vacuum that's been left by the effectively the disappearance of what was ILR.
Yeah, and I suppose Global and Bauer have been criticised to some extent for taking away local radio. They're still there in those markets. They're perhaps just not doing quite what you were doing at Signal in the 80s.
Well, you talk about Bauer and Global. They're two very different organisations with two different philosophies. And I know Bauer obviously have the place and the passion portfolios. And place really is what we were doing at Signal all those years ago, driven by local content and engagement with the local listener, whereas Heart is more of a specialised brand across numerous sites. But essentially, yeah, the buzz phrase we use a lot at The Radio People, and this isn't new, content, content, content. It's all about the content. Give people what they want to hear and they'll tune in and listen to it.
And in terms of the community radio stations that now exist, there are 200-odd around the UK. There are more just been awarded licences in Yorkshire and the North West in the last few weeks. Ofcom now considering applications in the Midlands. The South East will open again soon. There's quite a mixture of stations in terms of what they're doing and the quality to which they're delivering a product.
They're all very well-intentioned and they all have very clear remits in terms of their public purposes.
Is there a perception problem that people hear some bad community radio stations and those working professionally in the industry think all of them are like that?
Any chain is only as strong as its weakest link, and that's the issue. There are some appalling radio stations out there now. I mean, truly appalling. And this is where I have an issue with community radio. It's got to raise its game across the board. And, you know, it's all well and good delivering those public purposes, but if the station isn't listenable, you've got a real problem, a major problem, particularly when it comes to converting listenership into revenue and profitability.
In terms of some of the new ones that are coming on, I mean, what's your top tip for them? If somebody's just won a licence, what should their priorities be when they're building that radio station?
Number one would be to invest in training and instill certain standards into your Coldpace team, the people who are actually broadcasting and going into people's homes. I've picked up upon, it's an odd thing, but it's almost like there's a feeling in certain quarters that professionalism is a bad thing and it's incompatible with community radio. We can't be professional because we're community. Well, that's just nonsense. You know, any radio station has to have professional standards. It's got to have level controls, basic production techniques in place, you know, hit the news on time. All those things have got to happen, otherwise you have a major problem. And with the amount of choice people have these days, they'll go and they won't come back.
Many commercial radio stations in small town marketplaces are struggling to make ends meet as it is. Paul Smith from Celador recently came out and said his group isn't making money, there's only a couple of his stations that are actually profitable. Yet community radio struggles even more because it's got the restriction that it's got to find funding outside of advertising and sponsorship for half of its income when that money isn't there either. There's been talk of relaxing that rule, getting rid of it. Would that help community stations improve what they do on air?
Well, it should help, but you know, fundamentally these stations have to be low-cost based operations. And there are ways of making a low-cost based operation sound professional. And that's with, you know, clever use of playout systems and getting the right people into the right day parts.
And you recently did some surveying through the radio people of community radio stations, how they were faring, what sort of help and support they needed. What was the main finding from that?
The biggest issue across community radio is, surprise, surprise, money. Stations are finding it very, very difficult to make ends meet. But they also highlighted issues in terms of a training need, where to go for training, how to bring their people up to the standards required, and also on the sales side of things, you know, training for professional sales people.
And where do we go from here? I mean, there are community stations now going on digital radio to get themselves a bigger coverage area. What's the future for community radio? Are you just going to see more small-scale FM licenses, or do they need to develop more of a business side to deliver money into the community project alongside what they do? So whether that's training or whether that's providing another service to the community.
Do you know what? We badge stations up as community, commercial, BBC. The public don't do that. And a radio station is a radio station, and so whether it is a community station or a commercial station, so long as the content's right, so long as it engages with its audience and is very clear in terms of what it's there to do, if there's a demand for it, people will listen. If you've got an audience, you should be able to monetize that audience and at least cover costs.
And since you're here, quick plug for the radio people, tell us who you are and what you do, how you can help stations.
We're a small consultancy. Very small. There's two of us, myself and David Duffy, who is a former radio station owner and manager. And we work smartly. We are operating from any passing cloud. We have no offices, and so we can offer competitive rates to our clients. And we have been recently involved with a number of license applications for community radio. We basically look at anything that comes along, either within the radio industry, on the periphery of the industry. And we're working also with outside agencies on radio-related projects. And, you know, I'm having more fun than I have for years in radio. It's good to be out of the cut and thrust of the industry.
I'd say for up to a couple of years ago, day-to-day, you were inside a radio station, either on air or in charge of the place. How different is that change? And, you know, how can we tell people that there is life after radio?
The change is like black and white. And I think a large part of that is that in recent times, we've all been finding it very tough, and with the recession, it's been a very, very difficult time for radio stations, particularly the smaller operations like the station I was involved with in Oldham. So yeah, to leave that behind is a great relief, and it's now just, you know, quite nice to use the skills I've developed over the years at the sharp end in slightly different in different ways.
Okay, well, the sun's shining. I think it's your round. Time to get back in the pub. Thanks for talking to us, John.
Mine's a pint of what is Red Barrel.
It's the Radio Today programme. Let's get this week's news now with Roy Martin.
Thank you, Stuart, and what a sterling job you're doing as well, even if you are in the pub. From Radio Today's newsroom, here's the latest. DAB has been officially switched on in Derbyshire. Due to a number of reasons, it's taken 7 years since the licence award was made for the service to actually get on air, but it means hundreds of thousands of lucky people in the area can now listen to Heart, Gold, Gem 106, Capital and BBC Radio Derby on DAB. Evan Davis is leaving the Today programme and indeed BBC Radio 4. He's off to the BBC Newsnight programme on BBC 2. Replacing Jeremy Paxman. And the entries are now open for the Radio Production Awards 2014. You have until September the 17th to submit your best bits. That's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Thank you, Roy. And before this week's Radio Moments with David Lloyd, let's go over to James Cridland, who's been in Johannesburg at a recent radio conference.
It might be a nice summer in London, but it's winter in Johannesburg, as I found out when I headed out to the Joburg Radio Days conference in South Africa. A fantastically different conference. It's in its fifth year and is aimed at sharing great radio ideas with everyone.
I'm Franz Kruger, and I'm in the journalism program at the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg as director of the Wits Radio Academy. The intention right from the start was to try to bridge some of the silos that people tend to work in. We were very keen to draw in people from community, public, as well as commercial radio stations, who, at least in this country, tend to operate very separately. And we were also keen to build bridges to other countries and on the continent, because, again, there's not as much contact as one would like to see between these different the different countries.
So how is radio in Africa? It's a big place, and radio is different across the continent.
I think that there are a couple of commonalities, though. I mean, for one thing, I think in many other countries, you have a very dominant, very old-fashioned, and strongly state-controlled public broadcaster. In this country, in South Africa, we do have many discussions about the extent to which the South African Broadcasting Corporation is in fact independent and fulfills the role of the public broadcaster. But certainly in other countries, I think the situation is much worse. State broadcasters there tend to be very tightly controlled and also just very old-fashioned. At the same time, in many other countries, what you have is a developing small-scale radio sector, sometimes community radio in the sense that we know it here and that it's known in other countries. And these tend to be very, very low-budget affairs, you know, operating with a handful of staff or a shoestring studio, not reaching very far. Some parts of the continent, there are bigger organizations. I mean, one thinks of Kenya, for instance, where Nation Media have certain radio stations, and those tend to be more professional outfits. But it's a very varied picture on this continent.
One of the speakers at Joburg Radio Days was Gareth Cliff. Just as Howard Stern made the jump from FM to satellite, so Gareth Cliff has made the jump from FM to online.
Well, the background to that is that Gareth Cliff was a very, very prominent presenter on our biggest young radio station here, 5FM, and he left a couple of months ago and set up Cliff Central, as it's called, which is a website where you can listen to him via streaming. It is also available on WeChat, which is a messaging platform like WhatsApp. It is very new and interesting, particularly the WeChat element of it. I haven't yet quite seen, you know, what the audience is doing. He does take an enormous fan base with him, but of course, data costs are fairly substantial here in comparison with some other countries, and so it remains to be seen to what extent he can take that fan base into an online radio station as he's trying to do. And it will require audiences to change their behavior and their approach to listening to radio quite a lot.
Well, there's nowhere where radio is changing more than the world of student radio.
My name is Lakim Daweni. I'm in charge of the marketing department for the campus radio station here at Wits University called Voice of Wits Radio, VOWFM in short. Programming-wise, it's a majority music and content, but we do have slots within our schedule that focus mainly on talk radio. This includes from a science show to business show to current affairs, as well as a sports show. And obviously the 6 to 6 slot, which is the weekday slot, the mainstream slot, it's mostly music and social conversation.
There's a lot of variety on that radio station, and that's on purpose.
I think one of the reasons why we have so much variety on the radio station is due to the fact that we have a different kind of student that's listening, and also because we do have a contingency of academics and intellectuals within university, so we're quite aware of that. So we would like to have those people to also be part of the discussion in the radio station and also be part of our listenership. So hence, we have to constantly include things that are unique to the university, to the space, to try to be as inclusive as possible as a campus radio station.
The station's on FM and online, and the high cost of bandwidth means that most people are still tuning in over FM, even if the signal isn't as strong as they'd like. It turns out that radio is still tremendously popular across Africa. As I mentioned to Franz Kruger, I learned that more people own a radio in Africa than own a mattress.
Yes, it's often been cited. I think I've tracked it back to its source, which was an academic paper written at Rhodes University some years back. But yes, it is really an indication of how important radio as a medium remains on this continent. It really has enormous penetration. Its advantages, obviously, are its portability, the ease with which it accommodates the huge range of languages that we have, the cheapness, the relatively low cost of both transmission and reception and so on. So radio does have enormous penetration and really is the medium of the continent in a very real way.
So what of the future of radio?
I think it's varied. I do think that in the more advanced or more sophisticated markets in South Africa, it will increasingly be multi-platform, in the sense that radio stations, particularly commercial stations in this country, will need to put themselves onto the various other social media, new media platforms that are available in order to reach audiences in different places. I don't see radio here switching off the FM signal for quite a long time. I mean, it may come in time. But certainly, given the demographics, given the ease with which people access FM radio and the deeply entrenched way in which it fits into their lives, I think we're going to have FM for a very, very long time.
My opinion is a little different. I do think there's a big fight between social media versus the old school format of radio, the frequency. The accessibility of social media has kind of opened up the possibility of a multiple interaction to happen, multiple of conversation to happen, as opposed to being it being a one-sided conversation where you have the presenter who decides on a topic and they can just broadcast it.
The discussion around the future on this continent really revolves around the potential for reform of public broadcasting. I think that's a critical task. I think also it is around the extent to which all the many, many small radio stations succeed in creating more stability for themselves and a more professional basis. And those are, of course, issues that are, to some extent, outside the technological questions of how people will be listening.
Well, whatever the future, there's a lot to be gained from dusting off your passport and exploring how radio stations are working in other countries. For more about the Joburg Radio Days, you can visit journalism.co.za/radio and do that to the soundtrack of Vow FM at vowfm.co.za. For the Radio Today programme, I'm James Cridland in London.
Broadcast by Onyx, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Lavo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
We start with Radio 4 and the Today programme from this week, 10 years ago.
Now, Tony Blair celebrated his decade as Labour leader rather quietly. Well, as quiet as half an hour of Prime Minister's questions in the Commons can ever be. Tributes were delivered in numerous ways. One or two might be called backhanded. Anyway, watching the anniversary unfold was our parliamentary correspondent, Robert Orchard.
First class, galley flight attendant and our purser's been stabbed. And we can't get a good copy.
Handed to you.
That was the wrong tape. Stand on. That wasn't Robert Orchard.
So, what are we going to try and get Robert Orchard? Let's see. This is exciting. No, no Robert Orchard.
Sing a song.
Right. Well, in that case, we can't go to our newspaper review in Johannesburg either because he's not there. We have a problem with that. Indeed, we seem to have a problem with just about everything else. So let's do what we call in the trade a standby. which is...
Hang on.
We are... Sorry, this is terribly confusing, but I don't think either of us can find the bits that we are supposed to...
Here we are. Look, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Because we can not go to Parliament, we're going to go to a new building. Indeed, a building which may never be built.
The Today programme from this week in 2004. One of the BBC's longest-serving presenters joined the corporation this week 49 years ago, and he's still there.
Hello, mates, and here we go. And this one's designed to get everyone in a happy mood. Happy Jose.
Brian Matthew, a milkman from Coventry who became a BBC announcer this week in 1955. Now hosting Sound of the 60s on Radio 2, he made his name on Saturday Club on the Light programme and Round Midnight too.
In tonight's show, I'll be talking to former MP, now best-selling novelist Geoffrey Archer. We have a competition for you and we'll hear about the amazing fall in the price of coffee.
Goodness, happy anniversary, Brian Matthew. It took this chap a little longer to get to Radio 2, but he's there now. And this week in 1964, he stepped on board his first pirate radio ship.
If you'd like to drop us a line, perhaps we could do exactly the same thing again. Get some more of the old records. We've got loads in our vast library downstairs, just waiting to be played. And if you'd like to hear them, well, drop me a line, will you? Care of Radio Caroline, London West 1. And we'll see what we can do, because, after all, we're only here to please you.
Tony Blackburn on Caroline. He joined Radio Caroline South this week 50 years ago after answering an ad in a newspaper. And just imagine, had he not picked up that newspaper on that day, the world would have been a very, very different place. From Tony Blackburn to the chap who was to replace him on Radio 1 Breakfast, and that cheeky upstart hosted his first show on Radio 1 this week in 1969.
Tramping merrily towards the acclaims and gratifications of the top 30, no doubt. Martha Reeves and the Vandellas and Forget Me Not. A very good morning to you if you just joined us. It's 13 minutes past 10. My name's Noel Edmonds. I'm with you till 12 when you can hear from this gentleman.
No one's called me that before. The early sound in the BBC career of Noel Edmonds, who began on air on Radio 1 this week 45 years ago, filling in for a poorly Kenny Everett. And where were you before? You were in Trails, weren't you?
Yes, and I stuck it around doing two or three days a week for very little money, doing odd trailers and competitions, but getting to know the important people and getting to know the right faces and being seen around, so that the moment anyone became ill, as indeed Kenny Everett became ill on one occasion, I got a chance to dep for him.
Noel Edmonds. From the press this week, and what do we got? Oh, Time Magazine, yes, from this week in 1939. Gilbert Wright, who was the son of a novelist, Harold Bell, and this article tells how 6 months before, Gilbert Wright was meditatively scratching the bristly whiskers of his Adam's apple, and he noticed that queer sounds came out his mouth. Yes, it was the discovery of the Sonnevox effect, which rose to public recognition this week 75 years ago. And that effect was made by sound being fed into two small speakers, which they put on the side of the throat. And then you mouth the words you need.
Music, R&I, get back, get back, get back, get back.
The sound of Sonnevox, which was to play such a huge part in radio identification jingles for so many years.
Radio. Moment.
Back on the press now, 21st of July 1977. What's this? Radio journalist, Silence Station. London Broadcasting, the news-based commercial radio station, and its sister organisation IRN went off the air yesterday because of a dispute between journalists and the management. Carol Surprise. And almost a year later, this cutting from July 24th, 1978. And this one is LBC Dispute. Continuous music and advertisements took the place of current affairs radio programmes on LBC yesterday for the second day running.
This is LBC 261 medium wave and 97.3 VHF. Owing to an industrial dispute, normal services on both LBC and Independent Radio News have been suspended for the time being. We hope to resume our regular programming as soon as possible.
I think one of the admin staff were on studio duty judging by the speed of that fade there, weren't they? Mind you, great days, weren't they, if you were an anorak back then, because you could record all the jingles without disc jockeys speaking all over them. Oh, yes. Now, 21 years ago this week, after a very successful spell, Kid Jensen hosted his last network chart.
So, that's it from me, David Jensen. It's been good to be with you today, and I really hope that you and your friends will join me next Sunday at 5 for the Network Top 30. Tell you what, it must be good on this show. Old Stevie just won't go away. He's number one again.
Kid Jensen, who presented the last network chart this week in 1993, after 9 years, it was set to become the Pepsi chart, and we all got lots of new merchandise, too.
The Radio 1 Load Show.
Across on Radio 1 this week, 41 years ago, the fun started.
Good morning, Tone.
Morning,
we're all ready and raring to go out here.
How many people have you got today? It must have topped the 10 million mark.
Well, speaks for itself, doesn't it?
See you tomorrow, Tone.
See you, bye.
Radio 1, Roadshow.
Today, live from St. George's Park in York.
Happy birthday, the Radio 1 Roadshow. He used to make holidays with parents almost bearable, didn't it? So, with BBC 5 Live Olympics Extra, born this week 2 years ago, Grampian selling Scott FM, now hard 18 years ago, for £5.25 million. Commercial radio announcing revenues up 40% this week 38 years ago, and Our Tune launching 34 years ago.
And then the fears came true. 3 days into the honeymoon, Chris collapsed.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments.
Thank you, David. Another excellent edition, as always, of Radio Moments. Thanks to Roy Martin for the radio news, to James Cridland for his report from South Africa, and to John Evington from the Radio People for talking to us earlier on in this programme. I'm Stuart Clarkson. That's it for this week. There'll be more soon.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.